Technorama episode 546. It's October already?
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm here for the auditions to play Superman.
I can do that thing with my hair.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the lighthearted show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek.
Huh?
If you're new to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be podcasting tonight, Chuck.
And joining us once again is our podcast intern, Brian Brown.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Tomasti. Mr. Stepper.
You did such a wonderful job last week.
I have your list for the upcoming trip, sir.
There's no way but list. Up for this show. Yeah.
I've packed your clogs and your jorts and
jorts.
Your Crocs.
He's getting ahead of himself. There's no show next week and probably the week after because I've got a big global trip coming up. So
it's the Chuck Tomasi World Tour.
That's right. If you're in Sydney, Melbourne, Munich, or London, maybe there's a chance for a meetup, but there's going to be a lot of work and work-related events going on as well. So maybe I've got a few extra days in Melbourne. I tried to reach out to Philip from Australia, who's still around. Remember Philip?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I said,
wait,
hey.
You heard from him?
Well, about 2 months ago when I said I'm going traveling, and he said, oh, let me know. But I pinged him on LinkedIn, and I guess he doesn't check LinkedIn quite as often as he would expect. And I can't find an email address for the guy.
Hey, I think you're the only one that checks LinkedIn that often.
Daily.
Wow.
Daily.
All right.
It's part of my morning routine. That and a couple other sites just before breakfast.
Go to the bathroom, get out of the way. Check LinkedIn. I see.
Yeah. Well, that's because I'm posting about 12 things a day on LinkedIn.
That makes sense. So,
it's a work thing. Anyway, aside from LinkedIn, we have some feedback.
Whoa.
Yes, we do. So we get to play this.
Yay.
Yes.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in, blow it out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Why do I get the vision of Bugs Bunny typing on a typewriter?
Oh, we should put the lyrics to that into what we're going to do later. You know what I'm talking about, Craig. The thing that messes up all the lyrics.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, we'll do the mail song. Anyway, we got feedback from our loyal, longtime listener. Ooh, that has a nice alliteration, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yorga. Doesn't really roll at that point. We were talking about how this planet was 50 times closer than Mercury. And he said, you know, so the 50 times thing is bugging me while stuck in traffic. Now, keep in mind that English is not Yorga's first language. And if he's confused and I'm confused, then this is completely bogus.
Okay.
English is not my first language.
Would it not be the sun to Mercury distance divided by 50? And I agree, yes. Say Mercury is 50 units removed from the sun. So 50 times closer would be one unit removed. So 50 50ths is one. Sorry, I'm no good at math, he says. I suck.
Okay.
And we were naming off the rocket players like SpaceX and Boeing. And he said, don't forget about Blue Origin. They're also in there.
That's true.
Yeah, I didn't think about them. You're right. They're not a big name like SpaceX.
And somehow my On This Day in History title got mashed up with the feedback. So yeah. I'm going to do a little editing here.
What'd you do?
I don't know. I don't even know how I do what I do. So I don't know how I'm supposed to undo what I undo. There we go.
And then you have your questions at the end of it as well.
Yes, so. We're supposed to have the question in the feedback. So yeah. Oh, whoops.
There we go.
Thank you, Google Docs, for making bulleted items a thing of wonder. So our question last week was, what is your favorite time travel movie? And we got some wonderful responses to this. Did you see anything that was outstanding and original? Because we got the usuals in here that I would expect.
Actually, I need to go back and look at them all because there was they started showing up. When did you post that? Today?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to look at it as they were coming in, but let me take a look.
Jack Mangan, Back to the Future. Kevin Kostelecki, Back to the Future number 2. Joel McLaughlin, Star Trek 4. These are all ones that we threw out at the end of the show last week as possibilities. Did we mention Outlander?
No, we didn't.
Melissa A. Bartel says Outlander.
It's pretty good, actually.
Lathrop Peterson, Back to the Future. So
Planet of the Apes, that's a good one.
Planet of the Apes, and there was some debate whether this was truly a time travel movie or just a time displacement or what the actual...
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Time shift, time gap, Scott Francis had said. And I love these discussions between... This is what makes Facebook wonderful to me, is because I've got these different...
Well, Outlander would be that same kind of thing, too. It's time shift rather than... Time travel.
T. Morris is Time After Time.
That's one of my favorites by far.
Yeah, that's Diane a good one too. I like that
Okunin,
one.
Somewhere in Time, which was Christopher
tons
Reeve.
Tons of people love that movie.
Yeah. I've yet to see that, and it was filmed on Mackinac Island.
Really? Yep. Yeah. It's not my. Not my favorite by far.
Let's see. Okay. Back to the Future. Brian Kennedy says, "I answered you tomorrow."
Yeah. Very clever.
Although. Aren't all movies time travel movies? And somebody else, I forgot who it was, said, my favorite time travel movie hasn't been made yet. Or it has in an alternate reality.
Clever.
Cheater.
Groundhog Day. It is kind of time travel. It's maybe like more time loop. Because, I mean, it's really same day over and over again, over and over. So stuck in time.
That means did TNG rip that off?
Well, question is, which one came first? Yeah.
From Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
My former karate instructor, Mr. Jeff J. Deneau, says, Back to the Future, Terminator, and Time Bandits.
Time Bandits. That's a pretty good one, yeah.
Bill and Ted.
Oh, Bill and Ted, definitely.
Craig, didn't you say Bill and Ted at the end of the show last week?
Yeah, because I was watching it on Hulu on my phone. And that's where...
A TNG episode mentioned by Tiffany Van Boxtel, The Inner Light.
Don't remember
the one with the little flute.
That wasn't time travel. That wasn't so much.
No,
time
that
travel.
was
you alternate got, history.
Yeah, you got
alternate timeline.
You got beamed by a satellite.
But great episode.
But it did. He was living out something from the past because that world had been.
That was like the equivalent of visiting the holodeck.
Does Futurama count?
Wow, because
Fry goes from 1990.
Frozen, yeah. Kinda, yeah. Okay. Primer.
Not Time Cop. Got a...
Time Cop.
Time Cop.
Yeah. Rob Reel says, Bill and Ted, Wild Stallions rule. Needly,
needly. It's true.
Primer. I hadn't heard of Primer.
Primer's pretty good, yeah. I like that, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Army of Darkness.
Yeah, that's a great one. Because really, I guess it is
Let's see.
Problem.
Anything new in here? Arrival?
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Okay.
I think someone may be stretching the limits on this one a bit. Let's see.
Probably one of my favorite movies, but no.
Austin Power, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Oh, The Final Countdown. There we go. That's a good one.
Ooh, Interstellar.
Final Countdown.
That's when the Nimitz goes through the wormhole.
Time Crimes. Oh, yeah.
Cloud Atlas. Okay. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a time travel movie because it's different lives through different times, but not necessarily.
But it's the same actors, so that counts.
I guess, maybe.
My oldest sister, Suzette, says H.G. Wells, The Time Machine.
It's very good.
I also love The Day the Earth Stood Still. She's just kind of going outside the limit, just listing her favorite movies now.
Actually, that movie is a twist on the time travel because they kind of just stopped it.
Which one?
The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Maybe.
I saw somebody put Contact in there as well.
They stopped time, not necessarily went back in time.
True. Contact a time travel movie?
Well, they had kind of the time dilation piece of it and part of it. Okay. So, yeah. It's kind of like Interstellar, is it really truly time travel?
Yeah.
It's time dilation.
Well, he does go into the bookshelf at the end, and that's a way of going to the past.
We don't talk about that part of the movie.
It was good up until the end.
Yeah, it was up to the end, man. It really was. It was amazing until that point. And you're just like, really? This is where it's going?
Kind of like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
A refrigerator? Really? A refrigerator and a nuclear blast.
Speaking of... So, since we're on the topic of movies, before
Indiana
you go
Jones
to the,
is a time travel movie.
Craig, I just finished watching Lost in Space.
The new one on Netflix.
Yeah, the 10-episode series.
I haven't finished it, actually.
It's pretty darn good. There's a bunch of holes in the science, but if you can get past that, like,
not what bad.
The Jupiters run on liquid methane, but yet it's liquid at normal Earth temperature.
That ain't happening.
Well, the other thing is the characters are similar to the ones that you're familiar with, but they are a little bit different. Yeah.
Yes. The
different take on them.
And there is a wonderful, wonderful, if you haven't seen it, cameo by Bill Mumy.
Oh, Bill Mumy. Yeah.
So he was in, he did a couple cameos in the first episode, and I think there was another piece of it. They had his name badge. Mm-hmm. His security badge.
Yeah, they kind of re-referenced that again.
And you just want to push Dr. Smith out the airlock, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
They do so well with that character.
Yes.
And the robot is not the robot you would think. So if you haven't seen it, I strongly encourage you to. I enjoyed the writing. I enjoyed the character development. I enjoyed how, we're leaving all our problems on Earth behind.
Not really.
You still have the interpersonal issues that everybody else has.
Your humanity comes along.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, Dad, really? I'm an adult.
I voted for the other guy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some really good parts, especially the interfamily dynamic is really interesting.
And you know, there's a bit of... Really? You know, a 10-year-old boy figured this part out, so...
Well, hey, he's supposed to be kind of brilliant in his own right, so, yeah, I can believe some of that.
Everybody was brilliant at everything. That's the problem I had.
Yeah.
Well, except Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant tactician, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I enjoyed it. You know, there again, I'd probably give it a good solid...
Seven or eight.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. The effects were good. Yeah. I like the effects.
Oh, I think it was, the effects and the photography were top notch, I think.
Yeah, you could tell most of it was filmed in, Vancouver.
Well, everything's done in Canada because it's cheaper, man.
A small island in Mackinac, whatever you said. Where were you?
Mackinac Island.
Yeah, Mackinac Island.
Yeah. It's either that or CGI, you know.
All right, roll the D20s, folks.
All right.
Yes!
Don't tell me you got a 20.
19.
15?
8.
Okay.
Hey, now my dice gives me a 19 to kind of
route as
me,
last week.
Yeah.
My dice gives me a 19 to kind of, set my expectations is a little bit low.
Then let us play that wonderful music that we know so well. On this day in history for October 5th, 2018, this is the 276th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are only 89 days remaining in 2018. Oh, my gosh. Go, Craig.
I don't know if I want this one.
Too bad. You do.
You won. Congratulations.
It was on this date in 1283 that Diffid Ap Griffid, Prince of Gwynedd.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of D's in here. I think your app broke. It is the first nobleman to be executed by hanging, drawing, and quartering.
What a they really name.
Wanted you wanted him dead.
Now, hanging will come up later. We're going to curse this guy later. Yeah. It was 229 years ago today that George Washington makes the first Thanksgiving Day designated by the national government of the U.S. Boy, this could have been Thanksgiving Day, October 5th.
Boy, that would have been... Interesting. That's
but
for sure.
Who changed it? Read on.
Also today in 1849, American author Edgar Allan Poe is found delirious in a gutter in Baltimore under the mysterious circumstances. It is the last time he is seen in public before his death. Dun, dun, dun.
The Raven did it.
I think so.
155 years ago today, the last Thursday in November is declared as Thanksgiving Day by United States President Abraham Lincoln as are Thursdays, November 30th, 1865, and November 29th, 1866.
So they had like multiple?
No, there's the consecutive years. Oh, he's just saying it's going to be on this last Thursday.
Ah, okay.
So Georgie set it up. Abe changed it around.
No, no, Mary, this will never do. We have a trip that weekend.
Yeah, that's probably what happened.
Captain Jack, I don't think that's Jack Sparrow, and companions are hanged for their part in the MODOK War on this date in 1873, and then curse that other guy for inventing hanging.
That was that episode in Doctor Who.
Yeah, maybe. Also today in 1919, Cincinnati Reds pitcher Adolfo Luque becomes the first Latin player to also appear in a World Series. That's cool.
Also on October 3rd, 1929, the Kingdom of Serbs, Croat, and Slovs.
Croats.
Slovenus?
Slovenus. Is renamed to Kingdom of Yugoslavia, Land of South Slavs.
I didn't realize it was 1929. I thought that was a World War II thing.
I thought so too, but I guess way earlier, and that's what probably caused the war.
So I know that when my grandparents came over to the U.S., there was an area in their small town where the Italians lived on the hill and the Croatians lived over here. Mm-hmm. And so I know there was a Croatia before. And I understand from the people that live there, they really didn't like this.
No.
Which is, they were all too happy to bust it up in the 90s and go back to their home countries.
This is you, Chuck.
Oh, this is me. On October 3rd, 1942, the first successful launch of a V2/A4 rocket from Test Stand 7 in Peenemünde, Germany, is the first man-made object to reach space.
Wow, that's really cool. On the same date in 1949, Word, W-E-R-D, the first black-owned radio station in the United States, opens in Atlanta.
What do you think they said? Word to your mother?
Probably, absolutely. Oh. I wouldn't doubt it at all.
And paragraph to your sister, yo. All right, 66 years ago today, the United Kingdom successfully tests a nuclear weapon to become the world's third nuclear power.
Sigma 7 is launched from Cape Canaveral as part of the Project Mercury, with astronaut Wally Schirra aboard for a 6-orbit, 9-hour flight on this date in 1962.
Wow. Also on this date in 1985, that space shuttle Atlantis makes its maiden flight, mission STS-51. I guess -J.
I didn't know they had the letter designated.
Okay, all right.
Thanks, Wikipedia. We'll trust you on that one.
Right.
Otherwise, someone will fix it.
All right. So, also on this date in 1986, TASCC, a superconducting cylotron at the chalk wall.
A superconducting cylon, Craig, is what it is.
By your command.
Cyclotron.
Cyclotron. At the Chalk River Laboratories is officially opened.
By your command.
That same date in 1995, O.J. Simpson is acquitted of the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. I remember that.
Don't
because
you
I said,
believe it.
Thank goodness my daughter Lisa is born. After that, she doesn't have to go through any of that.
Yeah.
You're going to hear about it forever.
Yeah.
You're going to hear about it forever.
Go for the birthdays.
Yep. Happy birthday goes out this date to Italian physicist and academic Giovanni Battista Beccarina, born this date in 1716.
You get the Russian archaeologist. You get the Russian archaeologist,
Craig. Go.
All right. Russian archaeologist and explorer Peter Kozlov was born 155 years ago today.
Don't hurt yourself there. American film producer Ray Stark is born on this date in 1915.
Born October 3rd, 1925, American novelist, screenwriter, and critic Gore Vidal is born.
And also turning 83 today is American general pilot and astronaut Charles Duke.
Belgian mathematician and academic Pierre Deligne. We're going to work on that one.
Yeah.
Born on this date in 1944.
Also turning 71 today is American poet, songwriter, blogger, and activist John Perry Barlow.
An American singer, songwriter, guitarist, producer, and recently removed from his band, Lindsey Buckingham, born on this date in 1949.
Also turning 69 today is photographer Laurie Simmons.
American geologist and astronaut Catherine D. Sullivan is born this date in 1951.
And also born on this date is in 1964 is English actor Clive Owen.
Didn't you just mention a movie he was in?
I did. Inside Man.
Whoa, that was kind of weird.
Crazy.
American singer, songwriter, actress, and fashion designer Gwen Stefani is born in the state in 1969. And I forgot to get the birthdays off the birthday calendar. So we're going to do an impromptu shout out. Hold on. We're not done yet. We're going to run over to our birthday calendar. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. Put your name on there and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. We are looking for October 5th through 11th. And October 6th is John Durholt, Joe Doe, Itsuko Rumke. Doesn't it sound like we just did these like a week ago? I mean, these same people. It's crazy how fast a year goes. Also on October 9th is our daughter Lisa is born October 9th. Mario from New Jersey.
It's a Mario.
October 10th, Victor Carriao. He's in San Diego. He used to do the typical Victor. Mac user podcast. Garrett Rafal is also on the 10th. And on the 11th is Bruce Barr. We haven't heard from Bruce in ages. He used to be a regular voicemail contributor.
So yes.
If you're still out there listening,
Bruce. Hey, we even have a jingle for him.
We do.
Really?
Yeah. Mr. Menengay wrote it. did it with us.
Interesting.
So, Bruce, we need you to call in. Brian's never heard your little...
your jingle. So
your jingle. I mean, there's only a few people on this show that have their own email jingle. Mark in Memphis was one of them.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I stole that directly from
Brian.
from the old shows, yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So call in so you can jingle the toilet.
No, jingle the handle on the toilet.
Yeah, the handle just so it stops running. Yeah, I agree.
No, jingle the whole toilet. That's how you...
All right, we have some...
Everyone.
Well, let's do that again.
Bad news, everyone.
Yeah, bad news is right. Oh, Craig, would you like to start us out with the bad news?
Sure.
You're a little more sensitive than I am.
That's not saying much.
So Gary Kurtz, the producer who helped shape the early years of Star Wars and eventually Empire Strikes Back, has passed away at the age of 78. Kurtz first rose to prominence in the 60s as an assistant director and producer. Upon returning to the movie industry after serving in the U.S. Marine Corps in Vietnam, he was introduced to a future partner by Francis Ford Coppola, a young George Lucas. And Lucas and Kurtz's partnership would flourish over the next decade as Lucas went on to create first American Graffiti, and then, of course, Star Wars. So Kurtz's role as producer on both movies was vital. He helped arrange the deal that would bring American Graffiti to life before it became an Oscar-nominated surprise hit. Then, after Universal Pictures passed on finding Lucas's next project, a Flash Gordon-inspired sci-fi saga that would one day become Star Wars, Kurtz helped negotiate with 20th Century Fox for a deal that would change Hollywood forever.
Dun, dun, dun.
And not just through the influence of Star Wars as a movie, but in everything from the control directors and producers had over their studio projects to the rise of importance of movie franchising.
Merchandising.
Merch.
Yeah.
Merchandising.
Yeah. That's what the money's in. So a behemoth Star Wars helped create its down to the fact that Lucasfilm kept, of course, the merchandising rights to themselves. So Kurtz's impact on
the flamethrower.
So true.
The toilet paper.
May Kurtz's the impact on be the, with you.
Adorable.
Kurtz's impact on the movie didn't just come down to production deals either. During the infamously chaotic production of the film, he helped out directing several iconic moments of the movie. That includes the cockpit sequences in the film's climactic Death Star space battle, as well as parts of the opening sequence where Darth Vader boards Princess Leia's starship, the Tantive IV.
Oh, okay.
He also did a huge role in Strikes Back. Huge. He was the big influence on that. And that's why I think Empire is the best of the movies by far, in my opinion, of course. You know.
Mark Hamler had a tweet that says, I've lost a lifelong friend. The world has lost a kind, wise, multi-talented artist and filmmaker whose contributions to cinema cannot be overstated. It was an honor to have worked with him, and I know I am a better man just for having known him. What a nice thing to say.
Hamill's a really nice guy that way. I always loved how Kurtz had the Amish beard, too.
Yeah.
That was his kind of his trademark. You always saw him.
And he had that Lincoln look.
Yeah, he had that, no mustache, but all the rest of it. And it's always very interesting to see. But yeah, it's too bad.
We're getting older. People are passing away.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, what's that picture? There's about Mark Hamill has like four pictures in the tweet.
Yeah.
There's one where Mark Hamill looks like he's got his hair greased back, like he's on, what was the motorcycle show?
American Chopper?
No. not the Mayans, but the
You mean Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, he looks like he belongs on Sons of Anarchy. Look at him.
Maybe it
was. What is that from?
Maybe it's American Corvette Graffiti? Summer.
Corvette Summer. It was. I don't know if Kurtz is involved in Corvette Summer. No, it wasn't.
You guys clearly have not seen Corvette Summer. No.
I saw it once.
I saw it once way back when.
25, 30, maybe 40 years ago. It was a long time.
Long time ago, yeah.
Just because, Mark Hamill's in it from Star Wars. What is,
what have I done to myself?
Horrible, horrible movie.
Actually, did it not come out before Star Wars?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. That was what kind of got him into Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We have a story from Oddity Central where this Japanese startup will quit your job for you. Sweet. I'm perfectly capable of quitting my job for me. But for some reason, many Japanese people find it incredibly difficult to quit their job and prefer paying a third party hundreds of dollars to quit on their behalf rather than have to face their boss and coworkers and handing in their resignation personally. Senshi SLLC is a Tokyo-based startup founded by childhood friends Toshiyuki Nino and Yuichiro Okazaki.
Ooh, that's pretty good, yeah.
Threading the needle on that one.
I'd like to hear Craig say that one.
It operates Exit, a unique service that basically handles job resignations on behalf of OD clients. I mean, behalf of clients, typo in the article.
Wow.
For a fee, rather than having to tell their bosses that they can't or don't want to work for them anymore, Exit clients prefer to pay between 40,000 yen, which is $350, or 50,000 yen, $450, to have someone else do it for them. Exit's founders declared themselves surprised that so many people find quitting their job so stressful, but they have been more than happy to help hundreds of them through this process. This is almost like a reverse recruiter.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Thank you for getting me out of my old job. Can you find me a new job? There might be a, hand in hand there. Like, what kind of job are you leaving? And
well, that's why I think it's interesting. The article, they say, I'm perplexed as why people find it hard to quit, but I do sense in this atmosphere it's prevalent in Japan. So it must be a cultural thing of some sort where
it must be.
They just can't. They just don't want to do it. They don't want to face their bosses,
or a sense of loyalty to their boss or to their company.
Tim Elliott's got the right answer there. He said, "Just stop showing up to work."
Yeah, no problem. It'll be done right away. You know
that would
done.
That would not be honorable, sir.
That's true. It would be very. Yeah, you'd lose face. So, man, especially I imagine that your bosses, especially in Japan, they're a lot of their workers are very overworked. They put in many, many hours and then just so they don't lose face, basically they have somebody else do it. I don't know. It seems weird. But okay. Hey, if there's a market for it, knock yourselves out.
Yeah. And congratulations to somebody for finding that opportunity.
Yeah.
All right. Here's an interesting one. Artificial intelligence. Brian, let me make sure this font is big enough. Yep. Okay. We're good.
Athena Security has developed a camera system that uses AI, artificial intelligence, and cloud technology to spot guns and alert authorities. Wow. The company says because the system can recognize weapons and notify police quickly, casualties may be prevented in places where the system is implemented, such as schools or businesses. This has already been installed in Archbishop Wood High School in Warminster, Pennsylvania. Interesting. Hmm. Once the system spots a gun in the vicinity, uses the cloud, to send information to those who need it, whether it be a business owner or law enforcement. You can also stream footage of an event in question through an app, giving police a real-time look at what's going on and where. Users also have the option of connecting the camera to other third-party security systems, allowing it to lock doors and stop elevators. Now, there's pretty good. Because I don't know if I want my officers sitting there looking on his phone.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, check this out.
Yeah, they're all sitting around.
Look at this text.
False positives can be a problem for computer vision systems, which we know about, misidentification of people. That would be particularly troublesome for security cameras that have the ability to alert police directly, you think? But the company claims the system's gun detection is 99% accurate.
Hmm.
We've basically perfected this. And so we're already starting to work on fights, knives, and other crimes. We expect fights to be done in the next couple of months, at least the first version of it.
Interesting.
Wow. Back in 2015, a company called Nanowatt Design tried to crowdfund its gun detect camera, which used computer vision to detect firearms and text alerts to its users. It now says its security systems can be customized to detect specific threats, including guns.
So, wait. It detected firearms and text alerts to its user. Warning, you're about to get shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's because you're looking at your phone and you got jacked.
Wait, which user? The user of the handgun or the user
It's a good
of
question.
The
I don't know. It's probably somebody, though.
Are you going to see the gunman, like in the video, the gunman's going to have a gun out and he's going to get a text?
Yeah.
Start looking around.
What? I watched the video on this, and the lady goes on to say that it not only... They sell it as part of their comprehensive system, but you can attach it to other camera systems as well.
Hmm.
And it's really a proactive system rather than finding out later and examining the security footage. Because the cameras today are recording what happened.
Yeah, so, right.
So it's a camera for your security system.
Right. So the idea is that they not only can spot guns, but they said suspicious behavior. So if somebody is moving in a certain way through a business, yeah. You know, hey, they're dumping a whole bunch of stuff in this bag. What's going on here? I thought that's an interesting application of artificial intelligence.
It'd be interesting to see because how many false positives for suspicious behavior? Because, you know, it depends on what exactly would be the definition of suspicious behavior. Fighting is interesting, too. It's like,
how do you detect a fight?
Exactly.
Versus a dance.
The behavior part, else,
yeah.
Just gathering. Break out in this flash mob in a 7-Eleven and see watch the cops show up. Oh, we're just testing the system.
You know, the problem, I don't have a problem with identifying like a gun so much as behavior. See, when you start getting the behavior, who's going to be the judge? That's kind of
it's a really big gray area, and it's going to be interesting to see how AI is able to do that. And this is kind of what we've talked about. We talked about the decisioning of AI and how it affects things and of course the bias as well too in AI.
Here's two people standing up. Here's two people that limbs are flailing and now they're on the ground. I'm pretty sure that's a fight.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'd be after the fact for fighting, maybe depending on how long the fight goes on for.
Well, the gun part I think is cool. Cause as soon as somebody brandishes a gun and then at least it alerts somebody to review this, like, my webcam, if it detects motion, it'll send me a 12-second clip, and then I can review the rest of it. So,
you know what we could do that would speed this up even more?
Hmm.
Is have a security system that has guns. Now we're on RoboCop territory.
It just sends it out of the closet.
The AI has detected you have a gun. Citizen, 15, please drop your weapon.
You have 15 seconds to comply.
It's a Twizzler.
Not a gun.
What could possibly go wrong?
Throw it on Skynet. We're all set.
Well, also, the only other problem I have is the video quality better be really good, because anytime you've seen something like this, it's like fuzzy and somebody goes, it looks like a gun to me. Send him out. You know?
John Miller Jr. says, will it send emoticons? Frown face equals gun.
Can you use the gun emoticons?
There's a body and blood all over the floor. Oh, poop emoji.
The poop emoji.
Yeah, it's going to send the poop emoji to the gunman.
Yeah, exactly. Man.
Oh, I see you wore your brown pants today.
That guy is smart.
Oh, yeah, I had to do a Deadpool on me. All right, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back with the Hacks of Strange Stories and some Remember When and a whole bunch of other stuff. Stick around, because we know you will.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with Astronomy Cast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Hi, I'm Bill Farmer. You may know me as the voice behind Goofy, Pluto, and many other characters.
Howdy there. This is your old pal, Mr. Haney, and you're listening to Technorama with the Who Are They With? Chuck and Craig.
On the next article, I was trying to watch it while we were taking a break.
Yes.
Just to get a heads up. And when the, and of course, when we start talking about the article, it's going to make sense. But the kid was started to talk and I heard, "Hey, this is Mr. Haney." I was like,
"You're like, wow, that kid's good."
Well, yeah, he not, you know, he Mr. speaks English, but he speaks Haney.
Yeah. I was like, what?
All right. Have at it then, Craig.
Okay. No, you do it.
Le Win Bao Trung, a.k.a. Bin, is a five-year-old Vietnamese boy who reportedly spoke his first words in English, despite never having come into contact with the language. Today, Bin speaks and reads perfectly in English, but is only just learning Vietnamese so he can communicate Whoa. With his mother. And there's a video in here where his mother's saying, "What is it?" And the kid says, "Helicopter." "What is it?" "Bulldozer." "What is it?" And she just keeps hollering at him, and then they go read through a book. It's pretty cool.
Maybe he's teaching her English.
He probably could if he speaks it and reads it, yeah.
Born in Dong Van Village in Vietnam's Ha Tinh province, Bin said his first word when he was almost 2 years old, which is, you know, roughly normal for most kids. You could say he took a while, but no one knows that was when he said his first word. It was when people noticed it. His mother... Lady Lien calls, that almost sounds like Lady Lien, recalls that her boy kept pointing at a calendar and saying 11. She didn't speak any English and mistook the word for mere babbling, but Bin kept saying it, so she asked her older daughter about it and learned that it meant 11 in English. She went back to the calendar and saw that it did in fact show the 11th of the month, but that was only the beginning of this unusual story. Le Thi Lien recently told Vietnamese reporters that she was so amazed by Bin's ability to recognize and pronounce 11 in English that she took the calendar and showed him other numbers to see if he recognized them. To her surprise, the toddler recognized and pronounced all the numbers from 1 to 30 in perfect English. After that, she went out and bought the English alphabet, as well as coloring books and children's exercise books in English. Today at age 5, Bin can read English, can name English, the English term for virtually any item, but is only learning to speak Vietnamese, which is good that kids are sponges and can learn languages quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In her interview with Vietnamese media, Bin's mother could barely hold back her tears when she asked how she communicated with her son. She didn't speak any English, and he didn't speak any Vietnamese. So, in the beginning, all they had was sign language.
Yeah. A lot of miming, I'm sure.
Yeah, so. And there's, where is it? She was, it's funny, because the kid went to kindergarten, and the kindergarten teacher was starting to teach them English, and he comes home and says, "Mom, she doesn't speak very good English."
Wow. Okay.
And Mom didn't understand.
Yeah, nobody understands him. Can you imagine being the only kid in school and he's like, "Man, I have no one to talk to."
That'd be rough.
It'd be really rough.
No one understands me.
Exactly.
Literally,
yeah.
So, yeah, wow. That's an interesting story. How did he learn to speak English without coming in contact? He must have had something somewhere.
But, and there's at the very end of the article, read that little piece right there. That's the interesting thing.
This is not the first such case that we reported on Oddity Central. Back in June, we wrote about Mahmoud O'Neill, a three-year-old boy from northern Israel who spoke fluent English without ever having studied it.
That's crazy.
Huh.
That just makes you one. The brain is a weird thing, man.
It is, especially when it comes to language.
Look what happened to me.
Yeah, look what happened to Craig. He still doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
Or any other language, for that matter.
Sure he does. Craig speaks Southern.
He's Russian scientists.
What? Southern. Sorry. Y'all speak Southern, Craig.
No, y'all are the ones with the accent.
Is that what it is? Okay. Whew. You got me there. You're right. That's right, Mr. Step. We only speak English over here.
Yeah, you speak Phoenixen.
Phoenixen.
Yes.
You're not from around here, are you? Say it with me. Phoenician.
Phoenician.
Okay.
Let's give a shout out to the chat room while we're insulting ourselves. I see Scott Tyler, Joel Harper. We've got, of course, John Miller Jr. John Clifford was in here at least for a while. You and me and Tim Elliott. Who else we got hanging out? Mike Robinson. Is that a friend of yours? I thought so.
Me?
Yeah. You know Mike Robinson? Do I know Mike Robinson?
He's a listener.
I know he's a listener, but where did he come from?
Over there.
Yeah. That in place? The media corner.
Over there.
In the media corner, over yeah. There.
So we are having all kinds of fun. If you want to hang out with us, it's Sunday
what,
night.
You know what, Chuck? Fine. Well, I'll claim him.
Okay. My friend. Whatever. I feel like we're doing trading cards at this point.
At this point, they're like, we don't know who our listeners are. They're those people over there.
There's only 12 of them. We should know them by right, first
pick
name.
Pick your team for dodgeball. Okay, finally. I'll take Mike Robinson.
Jeez.
Oh, wow.
Poor Mike Robinson, Mike, man. Right. Mike, I'll take you on my team. It's cool. We're the cool kids. There's only you and me, but that's cool. We're okay.
Team Phoenix rocks.
Team Intern rocks.
Sunday, 9:30, if you want to be on whatever team you can get on. It's all on Facebook. Join us live. Go to our page, Technorama Podcast. Follow the page. What are you doing? Do you follow? You like? You join? What do you do with pages on Facebook? I forget. You There's so many it. Different social networks and so many things you do.
Hug it.
You hug it.
You love it. And just hang out there.
Call it George.
Pet it. Love it. Name it George. Yeah. And we'll see you. You'll get the notification on Sunday.
Yeah, we're going to split up into teams, shirts and skins. So
not it.
Yeah, definitely not skins here. That's all you, Craig. You can rock that dad bod.
he's rocking less of a bod than he had a year ago. That's for sure.
Let me show you.
No. That's not for video. So that's for... TMI.
Save it for the audio show.
Yeah, save it for the audio show. You can go shirtless, right. Craig. It's no problem.
All right. We have a Remember When story. How is this a Remember When story? It's new news.
But it's dinosaurs.
Okay. So remember when?
Yeah. Remember when dinosaurs roamed the earth? Whose turn is it?
Don't question my editorial choices.
I think it's Brian's turn.
I think it's my turn. The discovery of a new Jurassic dinosaur in South Africa shows that the transition from small two-legged creatures to the thunderously huge long-necked dinosaurs wasn't a straightforward process.
Really?
Introducing the Ledumandhadi Mafube, an early Jurassic dinosaur whose name means giant thunderclap at dawn in the African Sesotho language?
Sure, we'll go with Sesotho.
Yeah, sure. Partial skeleton is quadruped prosauropod, a distant relative of the giant long-necked sauropods like Brontosaurus and... Diplodocus. There we go.
I thought Brontosaurus was a fallacy. Camarasaurus. I didn't think Brontosaurus was a real thing.
But I guess it is.
Okay.
I was found sticking out of a cliff near Clarence.
Whoops. Ad.
No thanks for that ad.
I don't want to sign up for Gizmodo.
A town that's close to the border of South Africa and Lesotho. This beast thundered across the early Jurassic landscape around 200 million years ago, which, Craig, you remember that, don't you? It's right on the corner.
I was there.
Yeah, which is 40 to 50 million years before the giant sauropods made their first appearance.
Really?
Yeah. So
this beast was around way before the other beasts.
The lead author of this new study, Jonah Shoshwane, and Blair McPhee from the University of Witwatersrand in South Africa, say the discovery of such a large early Jurassic creature came as a big surprise. Obviously, because we're all like, what?
Huh.
So when Blair and I were doing field work, we had to jackhammer into the side of a cliff to dig out the femur. This is Schweiner. We didn't know what was in the cliff until we started digging, and we began to realize how big the thigh bone was. It dawned on us that this was truly a gigantic animal. Wow.
My grandma, what a big thigh bone you have.
It is. It's pretty good. They, you know, estimated the specimen was around 14 years old when it died. Huh. It reached its full size of...
How did they know how old it was? You count the rings?
Yeah, pretty much. They do. Okay. They carbon dated or other types of dating.
Carbon dated, right?
Yeah.
The carbon date tells you that it's 200 million years old. It doesn't tell you that it died at 14.
Right, but then they probably figured out that, you know, what the growth scale was on it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You can look at fusing of the bone joints and must be.
You can look at the bones and kind of figure that
but
out.
But that was a long time ago, and animals changed.
Well, yeah, and also you know that it's, you know, fossilized too, so it makes you really wonder how they really narrow it down.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe they're kind of ballparking it.
Okay. How big was it?
It was 12 tons.
Okay.
And that's his full-size scale, which is basically 24,000 pounds. But, of course, you know, it's not as big as the 70-ton sauropods that would have come later.
Okay.
But it was bigger than anything preceding the Triassic period, which is, you know, to offer, like, basically the Ingentia prima, which is weighed between 7 and 10 tons. So, basically, an elephant weighs 6 to 7 tons.
So it'd be basically it was about twice the size of an elephant.
So pretty good size.
That's a pretty decent size animal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though. There's a collaboration between South Africa, UK, and Brazil. Shows that the dinosaur was also a quadruped, but it lacked the column like legs that would appear later on in the giant sauropods.
Oh yeah, these are kind of bowed up. Well, the front ones are sort of
odd looking
elbows.
So, yeah, the article has basically an artist's rendering of what it looked like.
You got to wonder how accurate this is because they only had a few bones based on that little map we had.
They really didn't have that many, but I mean, I'm sure
that picture they have there, I know it's the bones, but it looks like that. Here's the cuts of the cow meat.
Here's where you shove a good flank steak, man.
The chuck comes from over here. You got to get your next shoulder.
It's the Boston butt over here.
Yeah, true to human form, we've already identified the cuts of meat on this thing.
Lots of good information on that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean,
we like dinosaurs.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, what, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 bones, something like that. Found. So
mostly from the spine.
It looks like, mostly big chunks of spine. So it's curious. And they did have, obviously, the thigh bone. So that sucker's huge. Look at that thing.
If I was walking through the woods and I came across any of those pieces, I'd just keep walking, or
more rocks.
Yeah, you would know. Well, the fact that they were
it's like, how would you even know that was a piece of a bone?
Well, I mean, obviously they were looking for something and they actually happened to find it sticking out of the side of a cliff wall, I assume. Maybe. So, I mean, they were probably digging around in that area. Got lucky.
Still lots more to discover out there, kids. We haven't found all the types of dinosaurs there were.
Hey, Scott Tyler
says
it tastes like
chicken. Thunderclap at dawn.
Huh. Something else. What were you saying, Craig?
I said Scott Tyler says they taste like chicken.
Mighty big chickens.
Yeah, chicken.
Well, they are related to the birds.
Yeah, it's true. So,
I wonder if dinosaur tastes like chicken.
We call this one Big Thunder Chicken. you don't see something like that. You don't see Thunder Chicken or,
Well, they did have, what were the ones down in Brazil? Those giant, big, giant birds.
Oh, yeah.
Weren't those like Thunderbirds or something?
Thunderbirds, I think is what they called them,
Monstrous things. Monstrous birds. And they had a beak that was most of their head.
Can you imagine, you wouldn't worry about your dog getting picked up by one of those things or a cat.
I'd be worried about me getting picked up by one of those things.
I know, right? Yeah.
How would you take one of those things down exactly? Nets?
Spears?
Rocks.
Pit?
Yeah.
A pit?
Pit. A flying pit?
No, the hidden pit where they step over and they fall in the pit full of spikes.
But if they're flying most of the time,
I don't think those were flying
animals. They're flightless? Okay.
Yeah. They were like giant ostriches with huge
they look like axe beaks. Yeah.
I don't want to run into one of those things. And they were something like 12 feet tall. No, thank you.
No. Thank you.
It'd be like an ostrich with basically a Velociraptor beak thingy on it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
I think I'll pass.
Yeah, me too. I'll pass.
In the meantime, let's thank our patrons because this show is helpful with them.
Helpfully?
They help with this?
They're the helpful-saurus.
The helpful-saurus. They are thunder patrons.
Yes. Thunderclap at dawn. They give us their thunder money. Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mega Podtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
Not that John Noble.
Not that John Noble.
Craig types in there. Yeah. It's funny because I ran into another one of those on my live video stream Friday morning. It was another famous name. I can't remember who it was at this point. But
John Smith?
I made that same pun for him. I thought it was pretty funny. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorgis Rawin, John Miller Jr., and Amber Elstad all contribute to our show, and we are greatly appreciative because they get, in return for their donations of $1, $2, whatever, we got different levels, They get special content that's only available to them. They get their name in the show, which you can do. And if we don't produce any shows like we're not going to for the next few weeks, they don't have to pay. So it's only a pay-for-play system. And
yeah, we're not sure if the conversion factor there is worth it, but hey, they're on the hook.
No, it is. The content is definitely worth it because it's very interesting discussions always, at least when I'm here. So,
wait, what?
Right, no, so but we'll throw you a dollar out of the next Patreon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Step.
If you want to become a patron, go over to patreon.com/technoromapodcast and you can join up and we'll give you a shout out and the special content as well. Thank you very much. There's something about that version of the song I just love.
But well, what's not to love? Metal guitars.
Well, I don't want to follow them.
Imperial March?
Following them in the parade?
Yeah. Well, you know. You're taking over slowly but surely, Chuck.
That's right. We have the Media Corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the Media Corner.
There's only one Blockhead left.
You know what I love about that clip?
There's many things I love about it. What do you like?
That's Chuck's voice 15 years ago. 14 years ago. 13.
And yours as well, dude.
And he's I can still do both voices.
Yeah.
That's the impressive part. It's funny because when Ben and Keith, we play the Technorama promo, Technorama, the podcast for geeks. It's like, hey, I sound just like him. I could do that.
Jeez.
Pretty sad.
That is pretty funny.
All right. We have a video clip of Jeopardy. If you're not a Jeopardy watcher, you're a gamer, right?
I am, Brian? Definitely.
You're a gamer. Well, they had some pretty sad ones in the category. Did you see this?
Yes, I did. It was like, oh.
Okay. There was. I'm not a big gamer.
Let Brian go with it.
All right.
Brian,
yeah. So this is the Jeopardy contestants basically just struggling. Oh, man.
Nobody got anything.
Oh, no.
In a whole category.
Yeah, they managed. Actually, they answered one correctly. And everybody else is like, really? You know what? A lot of us says both his opponents were born before 1940 and have crippling diarrhea, so they can't focus. Yeah, I'm like,
geekology is pretty cruel.
They're pretty brutal to them, but you watch it and you're just like, oh man, this is just, it's just like, no, nope, 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 nope.
They said in the game of Joust, the players ride on this kind of bird.
Yeah.
Nobody got it.
Ostrich.
Ostrich.
It was like 3 seconds went by and you hear the doot, doot, doot.
Yep, nobody.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, The Elder Scrolls is the other one. These games are, you know, part of The Elder Scrolls. And you're like,
Destiny 2 was on there.
Yeah. Like, you're like,
I don't play games and I know these answers.
Yeah. It was just like, wow. And of course, like I said, you know, geeks everywhere was like, really? This is how we're represented? You know,
I like the thumbnail of the board. Everything's cleared except for the column.
Yeah, they really avoided this category.
Pretty much, they're like, "This is not my strong suit. Nope, not going to go there." And they
get out of the library, Poindexter.
Pretty much, but I mean, it killed me. I was just like,
"No, there's a lot of smart people who play video games, so I'm really surprised at this result.
I am too. At least you know some of them at least should have got something close to it.
Or talk to your friends who play these games.
Yeah, you think? Well, I mean, because you know, Jeopardy's your general knowledge about everything.
Yes.
So you think that they'd have at least a middling knowledge about something of video games,
or at least read it.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Exactly. You know, you've read articles, something. You study up on these sorts of things. That's what I was just like.
That was fascinating.
Well, they watched the clip.
You know, what are they? How do you study for Jeopardy? People have read encyclopedias and just kind of go over general facts. But surely there's some video game information.
Well, not only that, there's just cultural information in a lot of these questions too. That's the other thing that you get, and that's where a lot of times, if you notice, Jeopardy players tend to not do as well in those categories because some of them are not as culturally aware. I guess is the best way to politely put it, and so thus they. You know, fail in these categories and they could fail big too. You know, this is like almost like, is this Saturday Night Live Jeopardy? Because it sure seems like it's, you know, this way. It was just so horrible to watch, too.
On the other end of the spectrum, we did have a story years ago about the guy who was doing the final Jeopardy, and he bid the number 1337, and Alex completely missed the reference.
Oh, of course.
He says, he wouldn't interesting know. Number.
Yeah. Oh, interesting number. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a shirt. I have a shirt that I wear at work that has a name patch on it. It looks like a gasoline attendant thing.
Yeah,
and it says 1337 on it. And people always ask, "What's that mean? What's that mean?" I say, "That's my official, you know, credit union
prison,
employee number.
Prison number.
Yeah, that's because it looks like a prison shirt almost. In that,
it's my PIN number, so I won't forget it.
Yeah, that's a good one to do, Craig. I have to do that next time. But it's so funny. I've only really explained it to like my boss's boss. You know, just because it's like, well, I should probably tell him since he actually writes my paycheck. But otherwise, I just tell him, you know, it's my official employee number or so, you know, it's my prisoner number. Yeah. I tell everybody, I said, everybody has has a number on them. It's tattooed on you somewhere. Don't you remember when you're training, all of a sudden you kind of felt like sleepy? Knocked you out and tattooed it on you somewhere. You just can't see it.
Sure not.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Not sure.
All right. We have a new segment we want to try this week. Tuesday evening, I wrote a new app.
One we talked about?
The one to mash up words?
Oh.
Yes. I had to do it.
Brace yourself, Brian.
I've been toying with this idea for a couple of years. The girls and I did it at Christmas. We would take Christmas songs and we would go to Google Translate and we would translate through about 7 different languages and then back to English and see what comes out. I did this at Jack Mangan's pre-wedding party celebration. We were doing some gaming and I was doing this. So I said, you know, with a simple REST API, I could do this fairly easy. So I did. And I would like to read the first part of Green Eggs and Ham as translated from English to Vietnamese to Telugu to Tamil, then to Swahili, Greek, Canada, Lithuanian, Albanian, and back to English. And it comes out rather dark. Rather dark. I am the same. I am the same. Sam Nihu watches. Sam Nihu watches. I do not like it. Sam Nihu watches. You like green, green scales. I do not like it, Sam Nihu watches. I do not like it, green, green scales. I like it here or there. I do not like it here or there. I do not like it everywhere. I do not like it, green, green scales. I do not like it, Sam Nihu watches. I like it, house. I like house. It with your mouse. I do not like it, the main page.
Main page.
That really didn't translate well, and I'm not sure how we got there. I do not like it with your mouse. I do not like it here or there. I do not like it everywhere. I do not like the first eggs and the flesh.
The flesh.
Later they go on to refer to it as eat green and gourmet eggs. And there's another one. Where was it? I do not like it, the first eggs and flesh. Where was it? There was one where they referred to it as... I gotta find it. The car is not believed by me.
It is not dark. Not in the tree.
It's not. Yeah. The car is not believed by me. And it actually rhymed. That's a part that amazed me. I will not eat them in the boat. Oh, I like the first eggs and pigs. There was another.
Oh, there is it. Feeding my baby.
I'll do it. Green cellulose beef. Thank you, Sam Nihu watches.
Excellent. That is really good.
So we're trying this out. We've tried some song lyrics. Some work better than others. Some don't translate at all. It's like this thing gets to English and says, let's try Malaysian. No. Let's try Hebrew. No. And I give it 5 tries on any language and then it gives up.
Oh, so it auto-picks the languages.
It's randomly picking them from 63 different languages in Google Translate.
Okay.
So it randomly picks these, and I can tell it to translate 3 times and back to English. I can 8 times back to English, 10 times back to English.
We can just call a voicemail and leave a message and just see what happened. Because I'm, you know, munges up the...
Yeah, give them the voicemail. All right.
It'd have been a lot quicker than you writing an app to do it.
As a bonus preview, it timed out because I was not doing anything for 30 minutes. As a bonus preview, one of my favorites that I love to translate, and it comes out different every time, of course, is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
So wow, you did a bunch of things.
One of the first ones that I was just doing this for fun. This is what I do.
Wait, so this goes to what languages? Same languages?
This one, I did it before I put in my Lister thing. Oh, wait, I can tell you. It went English to Latvian to Bengali to Polish to Malay to Catalan to Turkish to Afrikaans and back to English. So Rudolph Reindeer Red, very shiny nose. And did you see, also tell me that you shine again. The rest is behind. He uses laughs and names his names. Never let poor Red join any Rendian game. Rendian game?
Rendian game. Yeah.
This is my favorite part. Fog on Christmas Eve, say St. Nicholas. Rudolph, very bright of the nose. Did you tell me my fish today? Then he likes gypsum.
like tears of joy.
Red with red ribbon. You have to go to history. Rudolph, reindeer red, very shiny nose. And did you see, also tell me that you shine again. The rest is behind. He uses laughs and names his names. Never let poor Red join any reindeer game. Fog on Christmas Eve. It kind of repeats. Will you walk on this page this evening? Then he likes gypsum, like tears of joys. Rudy red beans. You have to go to history. It sounds like he's late for class.
Wow.
Isn't that twisted?
What are the things did you? I want to see what the other things you kind of went through there.
All right. I had some other songs in here. There were some better parts. There were some bad parts.
Wild thing.
Oh, the middle part of Red, Red Wine, when they talk about the lion broke, the monkey did. We just did that part. So it normally goes, where is it? Red, Red Wine, you make me feel so fine. You keep me rocking all the time. It made me feel so grand, like
monkey pack and riz upon.
Yeah, sweet where's the monkey? Here it is. Monkeys are flavors filled with fumjupalopolis. Red gives you so many songs. Ping ping makes me do everything. Red red wine knows how to love like a blessing from you. My favorite red color. Start from the heart. Yellow red wine for 80 years.
Wow.
Red wine is a modern fashion red wine. This is messed up.
That is, what a great laugh. How long did it take you to make that?
About 4 hours.
Time well spent, sir. Time well spent.
So we're going to add the preamble of the Constitution isn't very entertaining as you might think.
What was the other stuff we were spitting out?
You were saying a number of them. You said like Tone Loke Wild Thing.
Yeah.
Or CCR Bad Moon Rising. Wheel in the Sky was a good one. I gave you Wheel in the Sky.
Oh, yeah.
It's winter again, gentlemen, which oddly rhymes. I did not go home 1 year or more. I hope you have more. They send a letter in long summer day. Silver, not clay. How these rhyme? I have no idea. This is kind of fascinating to me, just that they do. Oh, I came across the dusty road. Oh, the steering wheel is still spinning. I do not know where I am now. In the air, the wheel always runs. I tried to go home. You have to make it very soon. Oh, I could not ask more. You know what we should do is we just put the words in and say, guess what we're doing? What song is this?
That'd be a good way to play.
What song is this? Sort of like Jay Langenjens did on Dog Days of Podcasting when he said he would do like just a scene from a movie in different character voices.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd have to guess what it is. You either knew the lines or you didn't. There was one that says I've made a hard month or something. It was really bad.
So basically you need your listeners to come up with suggestions.
Yeah. Yes. Songs, poems, stories, sonnets, I don't know, something that is recognizable in its original sense. And then call us on the listener line 707-530-2428. That's 707-530-CHAT. You can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. You can put a post on our Facebook page, all that other good stuff. If you want to find out more ways to contact us, go over to chuckchat.com/technorama. And that, my friends, is how we play this game. So feed the beast. Question of the week this week is, what mundane task do you want a robot to do for you?
Oh,
that's a nice one.
That's a good one.
I want one to lift my coffee and put it to my lips. I can take a drink and then put it back down.
Pour my beer, slave.
Really? Yeah. Is it that tough, Greg?
I would say most of the housework stuff.
Yeah, housework is that we mine as well. You know, that sort of thing. Cleaning.
We have robot vacuums.
You know, I know a lot of people would say cooking, but I like to cook.
There's satisfaction with cooking.
Yeah, that wouldn't be.
That's kind of an art form.
I want
thing.
A robot to clean my litter boxes.
Definitely,
they have mechanical litter boxes, but I don't
work very well.
No,
they don't work. One. They all.
I think
suck.
Scott Tyler has one. I thought he said it worked pretty well.
The only way to really do a litter box is to get yourself a nice scoop and
get in there.
There's
yourself.
No workaround.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, you know, if you have cats like Chuck, your cat, and my cat, who leave these big old piles, in there, what happens is the scoop can't get enough oomph behind it, and then it just kind of resets itself, tries again,
The scoop is bending because it's so heavy.
Oh, I've had it actually just, you hear it pop, and the gears pop, 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 and I'm like,
the electric one?
Yeah, not so much.
Forget that.
Now, I wouldn't mind have a robot to do prep work for cooking, the chopping and that sort of thing. Oh, that would be good for me. But cleaning, yeah.
Yeah, it's called a food processor.
No, not exactly, sir.
To chop it up.
That's what we should call this app that I just made. The it's like a food processor crossed with a word processor.
It's called the blender.
Takes the words and word smashes blender. Them all up. I couldn't think of a better name, so I just call it the word masher.
What was the name I think came up for it?
You had word masher 2000.
Sound Crusher. There you go. Sound Crusher 2000.
Sound Crusher.
But it's not just songs anymore. When somebody said Dr. Seuss, I went, oh, that's brilliant. We got to throw, see what happens.
The language mutilator. The mangler.
Mangler.
We'll just call it Babble On and On.
Babble On and On. That's a pretty good one, too. I like that.
Tune in next week for another one.
Yes.
There you go. Ask your listeners, you know, name it for us. What should we name this app that this Frankenstein monster that Chuck has created?
Mike Robinson said Song Juicer.
Song Juicer. Well, but it's just not songs. That's the thing. So you do multiple things. So then
Word Juicer.
Language
there we go.
Juicer.
The Language Juicer.
Word Juicer. Lex Juicer.
Word Up Juicer.
Alexa, mangle these song lyrics for me.
Okay, coming right up.
Yeah.
I think on that note, that takes us to the end of the show. Let's play that ending theme. Oh, sweet, sweet sound. No, we're going to have to take that voicemail song. Letters. Oh, we get letters, and we're going to mash that up.
There you go. I think so. That's a good one.
And then we're going to sing it that way next time.
So
send us some feedback. We want to hear from you. You can find out more at chuckchat.com/technorama. It's got links to the podcast, to the videos, to news stories, to everything you need to get in touch with us. You can find it all there, so I'm not going to read it all for you on the end of this show. Brian, thank you very much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Craig, thanks for all the hard work.
Yes.
Teamwork.
And thank you for your hard work and coding the word juicer or whatever we're calling it.
The word bleeder.
The mangler.
Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama and give us a binary high five, Craig.
101. I wasn't sure what signals. There you go.
He doesn't speak Vietnamese yet.
Yeah.
Working on it.